This week in agriculture, a production of the Red River Farm Network with a look at markets. I'm Randy Conan. Grain markets, USDA made minor changes in the April supply demand report. Wheat ending stocks raised to 698 million bushels from 673 in March. Corn ending stocks nearly unchanged, 2.12 million bushels, down from 2.17 million in March. Soybean ending stocks raised from 315 million bushels to 340 million bushels. USDA made no changes to Brazil's corn or soybean production, but did lower Argentina's corn production by 1 million metric tons. U.S. Commodities President Don Rose thinks much of the grain action we saw late in the day Friday was funds exiting those short positions.
Really looked like it was when in doubt, get me out type of trade by the funds. You had reverting back to the late 70s, early 80s when we focused on inflation, and we had gold was up $65 an ounce at one time, silver up $1.50 an ounce, and it just looked like the fear trade was there on inflation, much like we had in a number of years back.
USDA's supply-demand report did not offer many changes to the March report. Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting President Mike Zuzulo says Brazil's production remains the big question mark.
The area of concern remains is the small crop getting smaller in Brazil, but we really didn't get an answer on that, especially and even in Argentina with some of the disease pressure that's just reared its head this last week or two. That, too, could be questioned at this stage of the game. So we're going to have to leave it up to the price action in Brazil, in Argentina, at the Port of Paranagua, and upriver in the case of Argentina, to give us an indication of how tight those supply figures are after these numbers today.
Brazil's crop supply agency, CONAB, estimates Brazil's soybean production at 146.5 million metric tons, down slightly from the March estimate, about 5% less than last year's production. Brazil's corn crop estimated at 111 million metric tons, down from 112.7 last month and 132 million tons a year ago. Grain markets saw some buying interest to end the week. Martinson Ag Risk Management President Randy Martinson says traders remain very wary of those South American production numbers.
That there was nothing in it to really give us any direction or anything more than what we already knew, so the market kind of just disregarded. I think the biggest question mark continues to be, you know, when are they going to make adjustments to the South American crop? You know, I mean, I was looking at the numbers this morning, just, you know, between CONAB and the USDA, I mean, it's over 8 million metric ton on soybeans difference, you know, where, you know, CONAB is lower. And then when you look at it for soybeans, it's, or for corn, it's 13 million metric ton. I mean, it's over 500 million bushels difference between USDA's projections and CONAB's projections.
USDA's ag attaché in Beijing forecasting the 24-25 Chinese corn production at a record high, 296 million metric tons. That's up 2.4% from last year, and if realized, would be the fourth straight year of record corn production. The attaché expects Chinese corn imports to total 20 million tons next year, down from 23 million tons this year. Agricultural exports for the first 5 months of the fiscal year are down 7% from a year ago. Ag imports are up 2%.
We're a trade balance of negative $4.1 billion, which is $7.2 billion lower than the trade balance at this point last year.
That's USDA economist Bart Kenner. For the fiscal year, USDA is forecasting an agricultural trade deficit of more than $30 billion. That's a look at markets. This week in agriculture, I'm Randy Conan.
The Minnesota Corn Growers Association has worked tirelessly in the interests of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, they're at the table when you can't be. But like you, they can't do it alone. Their strength is in their members. The strength is in you. Join Minnesota Corn as it continues to advocate for the American corn farmer. Visit mncorn.org and become a member today. That's mncorn.org.
The South Dakota FFA Convention brings together the blue and gold from throughout the state. This is Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Tyler Donaldson. Listen for exclusive coverage from Brookings. We'll focus on award winners and FFA leaders. This coverage is sponsored by the South Dakota Farmers Union, South Dakota Farm Bureau, South Dakota Corn Utilization Council, and Full Circle Ag. On air, online, and in person, the Red River Farm Network is reporting agriculture's business. With a look at farm news this week in agriculture, I'm Tyler Donaldson. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer has outlined his legislative priorities for the weeks and months ahead, and the farm bill was not mentioned. House Agriculture Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson has been more optimistic, saying a draft farm bill text could be available before the end of this month. The extension of the current farm bill expires at the end of September. In January, the board and management of CHS and GrowMark announced they were exploring a possible merger. CHS President and CEO Jay Deberton said a decision has been made.
We went in with it with our eyes wide open by both companies, seeing if there's something more in addition that we do, because we do have ventures together already. And what the conclusion of that work, both by the boards and the management team, where it ended was we aren't going to go any further. We still have ventures together. We'll continue those. They're successful, but nothing in addition to them.
CHS announced second quarter earnings of $170 million last week, down from record financial reports in the past 2 years. Margins are tighter at the farm level. Deberton said that is being reflected in crop input purchases. For the first time since the Russian invasion of Ukraine, container shipping between Ukraine and Romania has restarted. This move is designed to support grain shipments and boost overall trade volume by 20%. The U.S. International Trade Commission is being asked to determine if imports of 2 and 4D are harming or threatening U.S. agriculture. Corteva filed the anti-dumping and countervailing duty petitions with the ITC in a dispute over trade practices by India and China. National Corn Growers Association President Harold Woolley provided testimony, saying American farmers need reliable access to these herbicide products. Woolley, who is a Minnesota farmer, said this proposal has the potential to limit imports, raise prices, and create a supply shortage. The ITC must make a decision within the next 45 days. And four Texas farmers are suing USDA for prioritizing socially disadvantaged farmers when making disaster and pandemic relief payments. The lawsuit argues it is unconstitutional for this assistance to be based on race and sex. The Federal Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. has upheld California's vehicle emissions waiver, allowing the state to adopt more stringent fuel emission standards than the federal government. The California Air Resources Board is requiring 100% of the new light and medium duty cars and trucks sold in the state to be zero emission vehicles by 2035. 17 states and the District of Columbia have adopted the same standard. Minnesota is the only Midwestern state on that list. USDA's National Agriculture Statistics Service has canceled the 2024 July cattle report and is discontinuing the Cotton Objective Yield Survey, as well as all county estimates for crop and livestock, beginning with the 2024 production year. USDA Statistics Division Director Troy Joshua says it's hard to measure what impact this could have.
There is always a utilization, you know, of all of the information that we provide to the public. Will it be have an impact? You know, I cannot capture and measure that information, but, you know, we are going to hear from our data users that have a concern or that would love to see us continue publishing this information.
Earlier this week, North Dakota Senator John Hoeven introduced the Federal Agriculture Risk Management Enhancement and Resilience, or FARMER, Act. In Hoeven's view, this proposal puts the farm back into the farm bill.
What does that mean? That means we've got to enhance crop insurance, which is exactly what this bill does, and we have to strengthen the countercyclical safety net, ARC and PLC.
North Carolina and South Dakota are the latest states to find bovine influenza A in dairy cattle. This makes 24 reports across 7 states since first being detected in Kansas and Texas dairy herds. Cow-to-cow transmission now does seem possible, and one case of transmission to a human as recent as a week ago has been recorded, only the second time ever. Despite this, risk to human transmission is still considered very low, and experts are reminding farmers to tighten biosecurity protocols. The virus does not survive the pasteurization process. That's a look at farm news this week in agriculture. I'm Tyler Donaldson.
Protect your livelihood with a livestock risk protection policy through Ag Country Farm Credit Services. With an LRP policy, you're covered if the market price unexpectedly drops for fed cattle, feeder cattle, or swine. Coverage options range from 70 to 100%. Get an LRP policy from a team that knows agriculture. Contact your local Ag Country office to learn more. Ag Country. Focused on ag, focused on you. Ag Country is an equal opportunity lender and provider.
Be listening for the Sugar Beet Report every Thursday at 12:50 on most of these Red River Farm Network stations. Each week, we'll talk with industry representatives, agronomists, and extension specialists and get the latest update on the sugar beet crop. The Sugar Beet Report, every Thursday at 12:50 during Agriculture Today. The Sugar Beet Report, brought to you by Provosol from BASF, Amity Technology, Spinade from Belgium Crop Protection, Vive Crop Protection, and Invita from Azotic.
Here's a look at weather this week in agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Whitney Pittman. The latest U.S. drought monitor shows drought coverage across the U.S. is at its lowest since spring of 2020. Recent rain and snow during the past few weeks continued to ease drought conditions across the upper Midwest. Drought continues to develop or intensify across parts of the southern Great Plains and lower Ohio Valley. The High Plains saw a one-category improvement across parts of Wyoming and western South Dakota. Abnormal dryness was reduced throughout the Dakotas. While water levels are higher now than this time last year, the Mississippi River could still see issues if drought expands in the Midwest. Soy Transportation Coalition Executive Director Mike Steenhook explains.
We have seen water levels rebound considerably since the fall of last year when water levels were at historically low levels. But when you look at water levels as they currently are compared to the spectrum where they normally would be at this time of the year, we are at the lower end of that spectrum. And so what that tells us is that it wouldn't take a considerable period of dry weather, particularly when you also take into consideration that so much of farm ground in the Midwest and in the Plain States continues to be in drought condition.
EnDon Director Daryl Richeson says while many people are tempted to get into the field, soil temperatures are not there yet in a lot of areas. It's important to check those temperatures in the morning.
It's more the morning. How is it holding that temperature? Not so much just what the peak is during the afternoon hours. Of course, with no snow this year in April, the bare soil, especially the folks that don't practice no-till, really have that just soil sitting there. It can warm up quite a bit in the afternoon, but you know, the key is it tends to cool down quite a bit overnight. So to me, I always get in the habit of looking, say, when you get up in the morning or, say, 6, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, and that's probably a better measure of how soil temperature is going up. But right now at the 4-inch depth, almost everyone is in the 30s. And truth be, there's, you know, still some frost in the ground, but most of it's pretty deep and it's not really relevant anymore.
The forecast could bring more cold temperatures and freezing. There could also be another chance for moisture for much of the Red River Valley early next week. University of Minnesota Extension corn agronomist Jeff Coulter says weather 1 to 2 days after corn planting is more critical than soil temperature.
We'll keep an eye on what the forecast is, you know, around your projected planting date and, you know, the next couple days after. For corn, you know, we don't need to wait until the soil temperature is 50 degrees. For planting, we just need 50 degrees for germination to occur. But what we want to kind of avoid for corn is having the soil temp drop to the low 40s or below within 1 to 2 days after planting the corn. If that happens, we can run into some problems with emergence and the need for replanting.
The last few years have been tough on Kansas wheat. This spring is shaping up to follow that trend. Kansas Wheat Commission Vice President of Research and Operations Aaron Harries says the last 2 years have been the toughest two-year drought stretch in Kansas history. Harries believes that last year was the smallest wheat crop Kansas has seen in 70 years.
USDA says the crop was around 200 million bushels, and we think it probably didn't even get to 200 million bushels. So our five-year rolling average on wheat production is around 330 million bushels, so we didn't even have two-thirds of a normal wheat crop. 2022 was a little bit better than that, not much better, so our trend right now is not really good. And while we've had a much better fall and much better start to the wheat crop here in 2024, the outlook just isn't favorable for weather conditions.
That's been a look at weather this week in agriculture. I'm Whitney Pittman on the Red River Farm Network.
For over 100 years, Minnesota Farm Bureau has been the trusted voice of agriculture for farm and ranch families. They advocate on behalf of members to advance policy priorities, address immediate impacts to agriculture as a result of current events, and support rural communities. When it comes to advocacy, your voice is stronger when you're part of Farm Bureau. Visit www.fbmn.org to join today and make a difference in the future of agriculture.
Catastrophic wildfires have scorched over 1 million acres in the Texas Panhandle. Homes, barns, fences, and livestock have been lost. You can help farmers and ranchers who have been affected by the fires by donating to the Texas Panhandle Wildfire Relief Fund. 100% of all donations received go directly to farmers and ranchers impacted by the fires. To make a tax-deductible donation, go to texasfarmbureau.org and click the red Wildfire Relief Fund button at the top of the page.